All right, we bring in the professor on this Sunday morning. That is Ron Wotus. Well, how are you?
Top of the morning to you, Marty. I'm well. I'm doing just great.
Great. All right. Hey, we talked a little bit about River Islands last week, about Islander Field and what Don Johns is going out there. And, you know, I was looking over the list, and June 13th through the 15th, now this, you know, at River Islands, they have the area code tryouts, and it's hosted by the A's in Major League Baseball. The top 60 players, evaluation and team selection prior to the MLB draft, which this year is during the All-Star game. Whoa, this is a big deal, the area code games.
Yeah, it is. I mean, for an amateur player, this is the best of the best. If you get invited to the area code games, you're doing something right. I mean, these players are handpicked by the Northern California Scouts Association. You know, as you said, the A's run it. You know, Don Johns has put these events together over at River Islands, not just this one, but the other list that we talked about last week. But this is the premier showcase for amateur players, because amateur players, they go to showcases all the time, these high school kids, that's what they do. But they're not hand-picked by the scouts. And when they get out there, you know, of course, the facility, Don built this facility at River Island so we can hold these things. You have concessions, you know, you have a nice stadium, and it's a great place to watch this. But what you'll have is you'll have all the major league scouts there, and you'll have a lot of college coaches. It could be over 50 to 60 college coaches there as well, because they know this is the cream of the crop in Northern California, or even beyond, that these kids get invited. So, you know, and it's like the old scout teams that you've seen in the Bay Area. Tom Wheeler, a friend of mine, I think Don used to help
remember
with the
him,
scout
sure.
team. Yeah, he scouted for the Rockies and the Brewers and other teams. You know, they hold these tryouts or these scout teams, and the winner, they actually play each other, and they travel around to develop the players. That way the scouts get to know them. And that's why this is so big, Marty, because the scouts get to be on the field. They run the tryout. You know, the guys will run the 60. They'll have the radar guns. They'll get to watch the pitchers pitch up close. You know, they'll take batting practice. And the scouts get to know the kids. They get up close and personal, as does the coaches. And it's just a great event for amateur players and for the scouts and the college coaches.
Boy, and it's at River Islands. How about that?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I like it. They got a whole list of things happening all summer long out of River Island. So I'm glad we could bring that up again. Well, a couple of former Giants names in the news this week, and one is Joe Panik. And he announced his retirement. And look, you were a main guy in Joe Panik's development. Came up as a shortstop, moved to second base, and he won a Gold Glove. He's one of your Gold Glove winners, along with Craw and Belt. Really should have one. But I'm sure you're proud of Joe Panik, and he has announced his retirement.
Extremely proud of him. I remember when John Barr drafted him as a number one pick out of St. John's, and I always thanked John Barr when he drafted infielders number one. That got me excited. So, you know, Joe didn't disappoint. You know, he came up as a shortstop, obviously, and then made the switch to second base. And you know, Jose Aguacil was a big part of his development in the minor leagues. And, of course, we got him as a baby. And I think I read Craw's tweet that it was special playing with Joe because they were homegrown players. You know, they came up together. And there is something special to that. Matter of fact, the whole infield was at one time. We had Sandoval, Belt, Craw, and Panik. But back to Joe, number one pick, got the most out of his ability. I remember the first time I saw him hit. He took a curveball for strike one, a fastball on the black down and away for strike two, and there was no panic in his at-bat, no pun intended. But, you know, you knew this kid was going to hit because he wasn't nervous. He wasn't afraid to hit with two strikes, and that's why he was always a real good hitter. You know, a hitter that would fit in with the philosophies today of good swing decisions. And, well, the rest is history. We all know the play he made in the World Series and how steady he was at second base. And he's probably the one guy that made the transition from short to second that I know that turned the double play better than anybody else that made that transition. He was real efficient on the double play.
Boy, great career, and we remember him, of course, for the World Series in 2014. But, yeah, you just brought up the transition. How about Trevor Story? Now, we haven't seen him play, but he had to do that, whoa. He had to go from shortstop to second because of Bogarts for the Red Sox. Not that easy, because now your whole body is different. Your angles are different.
you're right. I mean, it's an easier position to play in the long run because you don't have to be in position to throw. You know, you don't have to go in the hole. You got to get rid of the ball a lot quicker at short and show that arm. But the angles are different. Starting the double play, turning the double play are the two things that can be an adjustment. Now, they got a little bit easier for them today because the runner can't hit you at second, right, on a double play. When we used to teach guys to play second, your biggest fear was, what happens if he breaks his leg? You know, hasn't turned double plays in a real game. Guy comes in hard and hits him good and doesn't have the right position with his feet, and now you have an injury. So that was always your fear. But you're right, Story's doing it. He's finally getting hot with the bat. You know, he had a little arm problem there in Colorado, so it's twofold. They had Bogarts, and his arm hasn't been the same as it has been. But interesting to watch him play. I haven't seen him play yet, but I'm sure he'll make the adjustment just fine as long as he keeps hitting those home runs like he has this week.
Really? Four homers in two games, 11 RBIs for him. The other one is Johnny Cueto, and I watched him on TV earlier in the week against Kansas City. Now, he was supposed to pitch today, but the Yankees got rained out yesterday. So Kopech is going and not Cueto. But it made me think of him as a Giant, and I was going to ask you, what was it like having Cueto sort of on your team and with all the ways he pitched and everything else? What was Cueto like?
Well, Johnny was a good teammate to, you know, the Latins. He was a mentor to all the Latins on the team. And he's a guy that was an outstanding player. And I think everybody welcomed him with open arms. We signed him to a long-term deal, and he didn't disappoint. Look, he you know, you think about the Chicago Cubs series that we lost when he pitched the first game against the Cubs, and he shut them down, and we couldn't hold off the Cubs in the first round of the playoffs. And Johnny, if we won that game, we were going back to Chicago to play a game five, and Johnny was on the mound. We all felt like we were going to win that game, and you know, we felt we would have won that game. He's been a big game pitcher. He had the experience, and I could see him still pitching and doing well. Look, he had a plus fastball and a plus changeup, but he was a finesse guy. You know, Johnny knew how to pitch, and that's why I thought he always could pitch a long time, even with a lot lesser stuff that he has now, because he's a finesse guy. He can nip the corners. He can give you the dipsy-do and the dazzle, right?
Really?
And, you know, he'll figure out a way to compete. He loves competing. You know, he loves competing. He loves feeding the chickens on Instagram and riding horses. I don't know if you follow his Instagram, but if you don't, you want some entertainment, you need to get on his Instagram.
It was great. Great. It was great having him as a Giant. I'm glad to see him in his first game. He'd done well. I was interested today to see what would happen against Aaron Judge and Stanton and all those guys. But they were rained out yesterday, so it looks like his start is pushed off a little bit. A couple of things, baseball things that happened. I'm looking forward to the professor breaking some stuff down for us. Yesterday, a very interesting play with Luke Voit, and two parts to this. One ended up with a safety squeeze, but Luke Voit gets a double, and then Nola hits just a rocket to right field, and Matt Williams holds Voit up. Now, there's nobody out. 7, 8, and 9 are coming up, and, well, you and I have talked about this over so many years, that third base coach has got that decision of what to do. Do you send him? Do you hold him? And then you're looking at what's coming up in the order. No pitcher, but 7, 8, and 9 coming up, and that influences the decision. So let's go through that play because it really had a good baseball dynamic to it.
Well, you're right in the fact that, you know, if that 9 is the pitcher, it makes it a lot more difficult. You know, you think about, you know, who's coming up, and with nobody out and the pitcher looming, you know, you want to jam them in if you can, because you just don't know if you're going to be able to get them in, you know, in the matchup that's coming up. In this instance with Matt Williams, I thought he made the right decision by holding him. He had Grisham coming up, and, you know, Grisham left on left is not good, but there was nobody out. He had all position players coming up. And, you know, if there was one out, I think he would have had a much tougher decision to make. And, you know, so with no outs, you're going to be more cautious and put the job in the hand of the player. And, you know, they executed well, because the second part of that was, you know, Bo Mel, unlike him, too, he broke out the safety squeeze left on left because he didn't have the confidence that Grisham would be able to get him in. So, right to your point, you know, a third base coach has to enter those things all into his mind, and whether he tries to score a guy with nobody out because he doesn't like the matchups coming up.
Yeah, so the squeeze bunt works, and it was a heck of a bunt. What can you do as a defensive team? Now, you probably think it's coming. I mean, you know Rodon is going against Grisham, and he's eaten him up already in the game. He just took the bat out of Kim's hand. So from the defensive standpoint, you got to think, hey, there could be a bunt here, so what do you do?
You're right, you know, and that's the key. You know, he's already eaten him up. You know, it's a tough matchup for Grisham. He always put in the tendency of the manager if he likes a safety squeeze. But I think we all thought it was coming, the Giants as well. But you're just not 100% sure. Now, what you can do when you have a stronger sense that they're going to safety squeeze is you can have the first baseman release when the pitcher lifts his leg like a crash play. So when the pitchers used to hit and there was a man on first, we would have a crash play. So the pitcher would lift his leg. The first baseman's crashing hard. You know, he's running straight in. Sometimes he'll even break before the pitcher lifts his leg. That way, if he bunts the ball, you can get the runner at second. Well, you can do that same thing if you feel a safety squeeze is coming, because that's where they try to bunt the ball, you know, in the seam between first and second and to the first baseman. So if he releases early, you got a chance to field that ball and throw the guy out at home plate. But it gets more difficult with position players because you're just not sure, and you come crashing in, the guy swings, you know, now you got holes all over the field. And, so you played a little more cautious, and you read when the guy squares, and if you got a good athletic first baseman, hopefully he can get in there if it was a bad bunt and still have a shot at making the play. Now, he put the ball, even if we had a crash play on, he put the ball in a perfect spot. It was almost a little lob wedge to the middle of the infield grass in the seam, and nobody would have been able to make that play on that safety squeeze, even if we had a crash play going, because where the ball was bunted. And I'd like to add that Estrada made a heck of a play.
Didn't he?
Recording out at first base on that, you know, picking up the ball barehanding and have to throw back behind him, you know, in the air, basically. It's all wrist to make that throw just to get the out and to kill some of that inning.
What great analysis. Yeah, Estrada's play at the end was out, laying out. Well, he's like laying on the ground and made the play. It was a heck of a play, and you're right. The bunt was put in a good position. That turned out to be the winning run, and small ball became part of the game, 2-1 yesterday. You got to spend some time up in Sacramento this week, and interesting. I couldn't wait to ask you these questions, and then, of course, they went to the computerized strike zone, the robo-ump, or whatever you want to call them, and you got to see it firsthand, Pacific Coast League. So give us your impression of it, and what do you think?
Well, I thought it went relatively well, for instituting it in the middle of the season and having the players have to deal with it. I don't think it affected, you know, the pitchers at all, except in one instance with Jake McGee, which I'll tell you about in a minute. But, you know, my biggest takeaway, I thought the low strike was more consistent in its calling. I thought there was less low strike calls with the robot umpire than there would have been if there was an umpire back there. In a 9-inning game, there would have been 4 or 5 pitches that I feel, with the catcher receiving it properly, that the umpire probably would have called it a strike, and they called it a ball with the robo ump. And, you know, on conversely, on the other side, I thought the outside corners, still coughing, Marty,
coughing. Okay, yeah, that's part of the show.
Live radio.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Conversely, I thought the outside corner, you know, was felt a little big to some of these players because, you know, they're giving the pitchers an inch off the plate is a strike. But if that ball nips the outer portion of that inch, that's a strike as well on the robo ump. So it's not just over the plate. It can actually be off the plate and be called a strike. You know, the hitters had a little difficult time with some of that. But the most intriguing moment for me was with McGee on the mound. So he strikes out too. He throws a pitch to the third hitter he's facing. The ball's borderline up in the zone. And Jake looks into the umpire and he motions with his palm up like, was that ball up? And the umpire looks at him And he puts both his palms up, and he shrugs his shoulders like, I don't know. And I never seen that in a baseball game, right? The guy will say, it's up, it's out, it's in. But he didn't know, because I guess they're just telling him, you know, ball or strike in his earpiece he's getting from the computer. So right. I think they'll make an adjustment on that, and they'll have to say ball up, ball out, so the umpire will have an idea, you know, what he's calling in the future.
And I said it yesterday. I think you have to have a challenge here too, because if they call a pitch in the dirt a strike, I mean, it's a major league game. You can't have that happen. So it needs some refinement. And as Bruce Jenkins said, it's got to be used in spring training all the time just to see how it works. But I'm glad you could be up there to see that one. That's definitely fun to do that. Go ahead.
Hey, Marty, to follow up on that point, we just saw it in the major league games the last 2 days where the technology can fail or not work with PitchCom, right?
How about that, yeah.
Two times, you know, they went out, the Padres went out, they're having a problem with the PitchCom, and they tried to get it squared away. I guess it wasn't working well, and the thing that blew me away is the umpire charged the Padres with a trip. Mm. Like, they had a problem with the PitchCom, and he had to go out to the mound, and they charged him with the trip. Now, I don't know all the details of what actually happened there, but that's what it looked like. He took his hat off, right, and they were fiddling with the PitchCom inside the pitcher's hat. So, yeah, it does need refinement.
Yeah, that's been happening a lot lately. Ron Wotus with us, of course, the professor. Pitch framing changes with the computerized strike zone. It doesn't matter what the catcher does. And that's a big deal to me, because I was thinking about it. Do umpires care about pitch framing, or do they say, hey, look, you're trying to cheat here. You know, stop doing it. What happens in that dynamic of pitch framing and an umpire?
In today's game, you know, the umpires really have no say. They just have to deal with it. And that's basically what the catcher's trying to do on the low strike. He's trying to catch the ball with his hand starting low on the ground and just racing it up and catching the low strike and bringing the ball up to fool the umpire. And it's just so interesting to me, because back when I played, and even maybe 10 years ago, you know, which isn't that long ago, if you did that stuff to Eddie Montague, who I hope is listening, or some of these old umpires, you know what, they would let you have it as a catcher. They'd tell you, hey, you keep doing that. Every time you do that, it's going to be a ball. So quit trying to show me up, you know, catch the ball the right way. So that's how much the game has changed in receiving the ball and framing. It's really interesting. It's changed that drastically, and the umpires had to make an adjustment. Of course, they're still making adjustments with all the rules they're going to have to enforce, and now they're not even calling a game behind the plate. They're letting a robot umpire call it, and they're just making the call.
Mm. Yeah, we'll talk next week a little bit more about some of these rules, because you get to see them, and one is the pitch clock, getting the batter in the box and all that. And you're a good analyst for this stuff, well, because you get to see it at Sacramento. So I like talking to you about it. We had a play this week that was interesting, and that was Joey Bart was catching, and there was a pop-up behind the plate, and he threw the mask, but he didn't throw it very far. And he almost stepped in the mask. And I said, boy, you know, it's a very famous play, which I'll tell you in a minute, where that happened. But what's the technique here? Do you just throw it as far away as you can when the pop-up happens?
Well, one of the things that, you know, infielders, whenever there's pop-ups in the infielders, and it happens to catchers, I think probably what happened to Joey is what happens to a lot of guys. The ball goes up. You know, you're always taught is don't call the ball too soon until it's at its peak, so you know where it's coming down. You know, ball's hitting the infield, and you see three infielders calling it. Now the wind starts blowing at Candlestick or wherever you're at, right? And the ball goes from shortstop over to second base, and the shortstop just called for it. So the key is let the ball get up to its, I think the word is apex, at the top height before you call it, and make sure you know where it's at. And I think probably what happened with Joey there, you know, it's tough in our bark, California, the high skies, you have no clouds a lot, and you look up and, you know, it's hard to tell sometimes where that ball is. He probably just called it a little bit too soon or made his decision a little bit too soon. And once you know where it's at, then you throw the mask away in an opposite direction. And I'm sure it went up and he thought he had a bead on it, and he threw his mask, and lo and behold, mm-hmm. here comes the ball blowing back towards the mask. So probably just needed to wait a little bit longer to make sure you don't step on that mask, because it has been done, as you're going to tell us, huh?
Yes. Yeah, you have it right, exactly right. He threw it, and he had to do three or four steps backwards, and that's where the mask was. Well, it was a play in the 1924 World Series, believe it or not. It was the New York Giants, John McGraw's last World Series managing the Giants, and the Washington Senators. It was Game 7, and it's the 12th inning. Well, listen, the 12th inning of Game 7, it's a tie game.
Oh, boy.
And with one out, there's a pop-up, and the Giant catcher, Hank Gowdy, G-O-W-D-Y, very famous incident, throws the mask, and then steps on it, and he drops the ball. And the hitter, Muddy Rule, who was a catcher, and not a big-time hitter, his son Dennis Rule and I played softball together when I first came to California, and George Roach. So Muddy Rule gets another at-bat, and he hits a double. And now the next hitter comes up, Earl McNeely, and he hits a ground ball to third. It hits a pebble and goes over the third baseman's head, Freddie Lindstrom. The run scores, and the Washington Senators win the World Series. And it all happened because Hank Gowdy stepped on the mask.
Oh, wow. Now, that's some kind of – I love your stories. You had had someone stepping on the mask, the ball hitting a pebble. I don't think I've heard that in a long time, but it happens, right? And it ticks way over. And you had a guy in this story named Muddy, which I don't know anybody named Muddy, so – yeah, no, it can happen, and you just proved it right there. Great story.
Yeah, Harold Muddy Rule. He was a lawyer, too, and managed the old St. Louis Browns at one point. But Hank Gowdy, he was the first one to sign up in World War I, first ball player, and he actually was in World War II, and he was in a World Series with Boston in 1914. So that's the Hank Gowdy story. So it made me think of it when I saw Joey Bart throw that mask and almost step on it. All right, that's baseball.
Very good.
I love it. That's baseball. All right. Not A-Rod. I always think he's A-Rod. But Manny Machado. Well, we've talked about him over the years, and I never was enamored completely with his game, but he's showing something this year. And did a play on Friday night, which was outstanding, going first to third on a ground ball to short, and he kept going. And I said, boy, we got to talk about this one. And first of all, it was heads up, but what happened on that play?
Well, that's one of the risks, you know, that you have with the shift. So they were in a shift, and, right, there's no third baseman. And the ball was hit to short. And, you know, so the shortstop's moving up the middle. Well, he's the last line of defense on that side of the field. And, you know, so the runner, as he can go, he can see, hey, I can blow right by the base and going because the shortstop was making the play. So, you know, what you want in that scenario is the pitcher to cover third base. But let's be honest, you know, we work on this in spring training and we tell them that. But, you know, how often do you see it, right? It's the first time we've seen it in a while. And so in the heat of the moment when it happens, you know, the pitcher looks back and he goes, oh, great, double play. And he looks up, and the next thing you know, Manny Machado, being a heads-up player that he is, he just blew right by second. You know, short crawl was nowhere to be found. The second baseman, you know, he's over towards first. He can't get there, and you're left vulnerable at third base, and that's what Manny does. And, you know, he's a heads-up player. You know, he doesn't always look like, you know, Manny's always had that knock, you know, that he plays, you know, he's so casual, but he does things so easy, Marty, huh? I mean, the game is easy for him over there at third base and at the plate. He's locked in now. They're getting a lot out of him. He's stealing bases. I think he leads the team in stolen bases right now. So look out if you got a Manny Machado on the warpath.
Yeah, he's doing it. And I've said it before, in the first, second week of the year, he looks like an MVP to me. And the Padres run a lot, and the Giants don't throw many people out. So they're pushing the envelope this weekend. But it was a big play. Because Junis threw a wild pitch on the next pitch, and the run scored, and you lose the game 8-7. So it really was a heads-up play. One last thing for you. Mark Hallberg, and, of course, he's the new third base coach taking over for you. Ground ball down there, and it's foul ball, and he tried to kick it with his foot. Whoa, is he a soccer player? Now, you've been the All-American soccer player. I never saw you do it. What do you think?
Come on, Marty. We know the answer to that one, right? You set me up here. You teed it up perfect for me. He's a golfer. He's not a soccer player. I'm the soccer player. And I never tried to use my foot because I don't want to hit that little ankle bone you have. You know, when you stick your foot out there, you think you're going to kick it, but it's that little ankle bone, and now you're in pain, especially if it's cold out. I missed it. I didn't see him trying to kick the ball. But, you know, I'll tell you what, Mark is a heck of a golfer. He really is a heck of a golfer. So I don't think he could work that into coaching third. But he's doing a great job over there for the Giants. He's fun to watch.
Yeah, it is. And but he didn't make the play. It went past him. But I said, if that was you, you could have kicked it and, you know, dribbled it up in the air about 10 times before letting it go. So it was fun. It was fun to see.
But you know what? I probably would have had a better chance with my feet because, you know, I remember going for the balls that are hit at you, right? You don't want to act like you're an infielder and you're really trying to make the play, because if you don't, you look stupid. So you half nonchalant it. And then when you do that and go easy and the ball hits your hand or you miss it, you even look stupider. So you can't win. So maybe Mark's onto something. Use the feet. No one expects you to catch it.
I love it. All right. Well, have a great Sunday. It's great talking to you. We'll catch up next week. Giants go on the road to Cincinnati and then Philadelphia. So we'll talk next week. It's a Memorial Day weekend next week. So have a great day today, and I appreciate it.
Marty, you have a great day as well. Thanks.
All right. That is Ron Wotus. Always fun talking ball with Wo on a Sunday morning. All right, more coming up. Bill is up next with Mark Sweeney of the Padres, and a very interesting discussion about this weekend series. So more coming up, KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.